tonight's topic is inspired by what I've been going through for many months with my sister, who's very ill. She was put on hospice back in March, and I started trying to prepare myself and kind of anticipating how I would feel after she died, because I've lost other people. I know what grief feels like. I don't like it. It's sort of like recovering from major surgery. It hurts. So I thought, well, I should do some thinking about living through loss. And that has inspired tonight's talk. Even though I'm happy to say she's still on the planet, she is still on hospice. The doctors haven't said, okay, you're going to live forever. But she improved a little bit, and she's stable, and she's not miserable. So I'm very happy to be able to say that. But we all know the inevitability of losses. Attachment equals suffering. This is a truth that we all know, if only as a basic teaching of Buddhism, the second noble truth, that the cause of suffering is that we cling to things. We want them, that we get them, we get attached, we cling. And when they're taken away, it's like rope burn. What Buddha did was to go into seclusion. That's the term. He left behind all attachments, except for a robe and a bowl. He left his family behind. He was the heir to his father's kingdom. But even though he had let go of all of these attachments, he still needed intense practice to free himself from dukkha. And the most advanced practitioners in his sangha grieved each other's deaths, especially Buddhas. And they all struggled with ego. They were kind of in competition to be the most advanced in their practice. And there were definitely lots of squabbles among them, which resulted in there being hundreds of precepts from monastics. We lay people only have 5. We haven't abandoned the world of material possessions or family life or romantic love. So does this make it harder for us than for monastics? Or easier? Who knows? What we do know, and the Buddha said this in one sutta after another, that just as countless monks and nuns had achieved liberation from suffering in Buddha's lifetime, also countless lay men and women had achieved enlightenment. So we're in the game, no doubt about it. I did consider monastic life, but it wasn't possible because I have certain health limitations. So what I've tried to do, and I think this is possible for any lay person, I know many of you are doing this, trying to make all of our lives part of our practice, living mindfully through whatever experiences we have. I've often said that the key to avoiding dukkha is to hold things lightly, the way you would hold a bird in your hand, knowing that it needs to be able to fly away and willing for that to happen. But this takes mindfulness to hold everything lightly. the mindfulness to watch attachments grow and identifying, oh, this is an attachment that I'm getting. And there will be grief to follow. And in a way, we can do what Buddha did on the night of his enlightenment, when he was being assaulted by visions of every temptation and every fear. He said, I see you, Mara. I see that this is a source of potential suffering, and I'm not buying it. So, okay, this is the way I've been trying to live, but still, I had a coffee cup that I bought in New York. It's one of those kind of cartoon views of the world. You know, you're down on the waterfront, you're looking at, I can't remember it anymore, but you see the rest of the world way in the distance, and it's all about New York. And I really treasured this mug because it showed the Twin Towers. And I had this feeling that as long as I had it and could appreciate the World Trade Center and the place that it had in New York, then I would continue to honor it, to honor all of those people who lost their lives that day. But I knew it was just a material thing. And I knew it was a fragile one at that. And all it would take would be for my spastic hand to drop it. But I didn't. It just came out of the dishwasher one day without its handle. And kind of takes the mugness out of it. So I had to go through my several minutes of grieving. I felt bad. But I have discovered that without it, I can still honor all of the people who, either without a choice or willingly, lost their lives that day. It's easy to think that the Buddhist teachings are that you should avoid dukkha by not forming attachment in the first place. Or, after we lose something, let it go. As in, just don't let it bother you. But, you know, this is like the rock in the hard place. And it is kind of harsh. It lends itself readily to self-blame. And there's no benefit in that. Doesn't do you, your practice, or the rest of the world any good. And it, in fact, hinders practice by focusing on the self, especially in a harsh way. There's no kindness. There's no openness. There's this clinging to the self. I'm a bad self. So let's not go there. In my own experience, I've lost many people I've loved. I've gone through a number of decades, had my opportunities to lose, and the results are really varied. And it's not about how much I loved somebody. For my partner, I grieved hard for a year and a half. For my father and friends, months. For my mother, who was the center of my world, almost not at all. What was the difference? Well, the only thing I can put my finger on is that I had no regrets. Neither did she. Mom was ready. In fact, she was a little overeager. Her preferred time had already gone by. And there was nothing unsaid between us. Every conversation for years had ended with, I love you. So I'm not saying that this is a formula that you should follow. Yeah, my practice helped, but it just happened to happen that way. In that one case, it happened that way. It would be nice if that could always happen, but who knows? What goes into something as powerful as grief is really complicated and very specific to the very complicated beings who are involved. So we're pretty much left with just the one simple fact that grief happens. And how do we live through it? Yeah, the practice and the teachings have some things to offer. And the first, as far as I'm concerned, is banish all self-blame. I have noticed in my own experience and in working with, you know, a lot of hospice experience dealing with bereaved friends and relatives, that grief almost always seems to include an element of guilt. Back in the AIDS epidemic, which was at the tail end of that, it was when I did my formal hospice work, survivor guilt was a big issue. People were very aware of it at the time. But I think a lot of guilt is irrational. You can't really pinpoint a reason, or rather, perhaps we don't want to, because we like to deny how powerless we are over death. And I think there's something in the back of our minds that allows us to avoid accepting this powerlessness if we can take the blame. Somehow I could have kept my loved one alive somehow. I could have lessened their suffering. And what happened to them is somehow my fault. I think that for many people it's easier to feel guilt than to feel the powerlessness. And for us Buddhists, we get to add another layer of blame by feeling that, well, if I had just practiced better, I wouldn't be grieving. This misery I'm in now is my fault. I know that that was a big part of the way I felt after my partner died. I was kind of a Buddhist teenager. I'd been practicing 5 years. So I thought I should be enlightened by now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why? This must be my fault. So any day is a good day to practice with the divine messengers, the awareness that we are powerless over old age, sickness, and death. But we're not powerless over the fourth messenger, which is practice. We can do that. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It can be just exactly what it is. So our best way to handle these first three divine messengers is through acceptance. I'm not saying that we shouldn't take our medicine or to have whatever treatment for illness the doctor and we decide is best, but ultimately, there is going to be old age, sickness, and death. And being able to accept that is tremendously liberating. If you can't, don't feel guilty about it, though, please. And then there's just the practice mindfulness in as many experiences as you possibly can. I can remember the first time that I dated after beginning my practice. It was awful to be able to see what I was thinking and feeling. I had no idea how insane dating was until I had to go through it mindfully. So if that was hard to be with, grief is really hard to be with. So it's helpful if we can practice with the lesser ouchies in our lives. You know, if it's painful, don't shy away from it, because something bigger's eventually going to come. And by being mindful in all of our experiences, when self-blame does come up, we'll be ready and we can call it out. Say, that is untrue. I did the best I could. Because I know no one can defeat death or the suffering of others. The traditional phrases for compassion are, I care about your suffering, but I'm powerless to end it. Which brings me to my second major point about practice, and that is compassion. First of all, for yourself. If you've lost someone you love, you've just been through a long period of time feeling compassion for them. And I hope you fit in some compassion practice for yourself. But once they're gone, you really need it. And we have to start with ourselves. I mean, trying to practice compassion for others without having it for ourselves is, it's not going to work. I am the gateway to how I feel about all the rest of the world. I mean, my feelings are in here and the world is out there. And if I'm not compassionate in here, how can I be compassionate to what I perceive going on in the world? And compassion is, it's big. It's very spacious. So it outweighs pity, sympathy, and empathy. These are the kind of the near enemies of compassion. And they all have a component that's painful. There's a clinging and a self-attachment in these other feelings, which compassion doesn't have. It's very open-hearted. I've often said that with compassion, the front door is open, and so is the back door, so that the pain of the world can come into our hearts and pass through. It's like the principle of opening two windows in a room. If you just open one, you know, you don't really move the air around. So let it go through. And that's what compassion does. The heart is open, and that can happen. And when we're in a state of grief, with compassion for ourselves, we won't curse ourselves for hanging onto that moving rope and ending up with rope burn. We recognize that, yeah, that's what we did, that's who we were in the past, and this is the result now. In the present, which is what I'm living with, and I'll survive it. Grief is the process of letting go of that rope. We can't let go of it any sooner than we do. But until we do, whether we're grieving something as intangible as the day long next Saturday, which isn't going to happen now, or something as profound as a person's life, we will continue to suffer until we let go, and that will happen in its own good time. And it often takes time. We're not spiritual athletes, and grief isn't the Olympics. So let yourself take the time. Make that time a gift to yourself to heal. It's like recovering from an injury or an illness. Deb had the smarts to call off the day long rather than plow through it and injure herself again. Practice can make the process of grieving and healing gentler, if not faster. Mindfulness lets us notice when we're dwelling on thoughts that feed our suffering. And I did notice, I have in my various experiences with grief, thoughts like, no one will ever love me like that again. Or, I'll never be happy again. I'll never get over this grief. And others, you know, I can't remember them all now, but you probably have your own variations. You know, when you're in a hamster wheel of thought and emotion that's not helping you heal. So we can get out of the problem and into the solution by turning the attention away from those mind states and into thoughts and activities that help our healing. And I'm not saying that we should go into denial. This is different. It's just saying enough is enough. I certainly mean no disrespect for the big losses that cause a lot of dukkha. I mean, it hurts. It just hurts. And we can lessen that suffering. With the suffering of grief, it often really helps to just turn the attention away from those harmful mind states to the details of daily living. You know, even cleaning the house helped me. I would notice after a day or two of immobility that, you know, the house is kind of messy. And just cleaning it up made me feel like I was engaged with life again. So while we're healing, we should look for ways to be kind and generous with ourselves and be mindfully present with the process. I mean, if cleaning the house doesn't do it for you, then go for a nice walk in the hills or out for a meal with a friend, someone you like or would like to know better. Look for the joys in life. It will help us endure and heal. And by being mindful with all of this, we will strengthen our ability to practice with the events yet to come in our lives. This is the art of practice with grief, to have both patience and perseverance in living through the multitude of losses, little and big, that are inevitable parts of life. May you all find ease and comfort in living through every experience that comes to you. Thank you.